Court podcast, Accessing Justice, hosted by CommuniCourt. This is our second series that will be focusing on hidden disabilities. Joining us this week is Cliff Hawkins. Cliff Hawkins is a clinical psychologist, qualifying from the Oxford training course in 1989. Cliff has spent most of his time working with people with learning disabilities, as well as working as a lecturer at two different centres of excellence in this field, the University of Kent and the Institute of Psychiatry. Cliff has worked all over the UK with a wide range of NHS, voluntary and independent organisations. Cliff has worked as a trainer with the British Institute of Learning Disabilities and as a professional advisor with the Challenging Behaviour Foundation. Cliff has also been an expert witness many times and has been accredited by the Cardiff University Law School as a civil, criminal and family law expert witness. And Cliff also works with us at CommuniCourt to deliver our emotional resilience training. So Cliff, welcome to the podcast and thank you so much for agreeing to chat with me today.
You're welcome, Carla.
First of all, what inspired you to specialise in your field of work?
I've always been interested in what makes people tick, and I've been lucky enough to be able to convert that interest into a career by becoming a clinical psychologist. And once I started working with people with learning disabilities, I realised that this was the area I wanted to specialise in, given that people with learning disabilities often struggle to access psychological support in the NHS, just as they struggle with the legal system.
And today we're going to be discussing the impact of trauma on communication. So just to kind of start it all off, what is trauma and the different types of trauma?
If we take the definition from the document produced by the UK government just in November 2022 this year, it's called Working Definition of Trauma Informed Practice. And their definition is trauma results from an event, series of events, or set of circumstances that is experienced by an individual as harmful or life-threatening. Thus, trauma may be caused by one catastrophic event, such as the Grenfell Tower disaster, a series of events, such as a child being moved from one foster carer to another, or a set of circumstances, such as the whole scenario involved in someone ending up as a refugee in the UK. Crucially, the same event, series of events, or set of circumstances will not necessarily produce the same degree or type of trauma in different people. So we have to focus on the impact on the specific individual rather than making too many assumptions about what precisely that impact is likely to be.
And what are the different responses to trauma?
Okay, well, the Scottish Government's guidance from 2021 on trauma-informed practice suggests that the definition of trauma in response to an event, series of events or set of circumstances is when the impact has lasting adverse effects on the individual's functioning and mental, physical, social, emotional or spiritual well-being. If we think about it in the most basic form, when we feel stressed or threatened, our bodies release hormones called cortisol and adrenaline. This is the body's automatic way of preparing to respond to danger, and we have no control over it. The mental health charity Mind point out on their website that this automatic response can have a range of effects, which can be characterised as the five Fs. That is, freeze, which means feeling paralysed or unable to move, flop, which means doing what we're told without feeling able to protest, fight, which can include simply struggling or protesting, flight, which can include hiding or just moving away, and fawn, sometimes called friend, which means trying to please someone whom we think may be going to harm us. And Mind also point out that stress can continue long after the traumatic event is over and that it affects how we think, feel and behave.
So it can really affect people in kind of lots of different ways.
Absolutely, and sometimes in very unpredictable ways as well.
How do people respond to trauma, and what are the signs that someone is being affected by trauma?
Again, according to MIND, there are many ways in which people can respond to trauma. They give several examples on their website. So flashbacks, for example, that means reliving aspects of a traumatic event or feeling as if it is happening now, which can happen whether or not the person remembers specific details of the event. Sometimes there are panic attacks, which are a type of fear response that are an exaggeration of the body's usual response to danger, stress, or excitement. Something called dissociation, which is a way that the mind tries to cope with overwhelming stress. That is, the person may feel numb, spaced out, detached from their body, or as though the world around them is unreal. Hyperarousal is very common, and that means feeling very anxious, on edge, and unable to relax. The person may be constantly looking out for threats or danger. Not surprisingly, there are often sleep problems. The person may find it hard to fall asleep or stay asleep, feel unsafe at night, or feel anxious or afraid of having nightmares. All this can lead to low self-esteem, in that trauma can affect the way people value and perceive themselves. And grief. So, for example, experiencing someone dying can be traumatic, and so can other types of loss. Many people experience grief as a result of how trauma has changed their lives. For example, they may feel that trauma has caused them to miss out on some things in life, which can also lead to feelings of loss. Sometimes people may experience self-harm, that is, hurting oneself as a way of trying to cope. This can include harming parts of one's body that were attacked or injured during the trauma. And at an extreme, there may be suicidal feelings, including being preoccupied by thoughts of ending one's life, thinking about methods of suicide, or even making plans to take one's life.
And are there any kind of unexpected behaviours as a response to trauma?
Yes, given the automatic responses that we talked about earlier, we can see that our brains will help us cope as best we can with trauma. However, sometimes those ways of coping, such as harming parts of one's body that were attacked or injured during the trauma, may seem strange or even counterproductive. Perhaps, though, this is all that the person feels able to do at that time to ease their pain. The UK government guidelines point out, therefore, that we need to see beyond an individual's presenting behaviours and ask, what does this person need, rather than what is wrong with this person?
Thank you, Cliff. So as we've kind of discussed, not everyone responds in the same way. So why does it impact people differently?
Well, the same trauma will affect people differently, as you say, Carla, just as people react differently to any other type of life experience. We know that traumatic events, including what are called adverse childhood experiences, are more frequently experienced by people in lower socioeconomic groups and by people of colour. And so it's even more important when working with people from these groups to consider the possibility of trauma. In terms of why people respond differently to the same trauma, factors such as age, gender, cultural background, and issues of neurodiversity will all play a part, as well as how people have experienced any other traumatic event that may have happened in their lives. Remember that trauma can affect our mental, physical, social, emotional, or spiritual well-being. So again, we need to ask, what does this person need, rather than what is wrong with this person, especially if someone seems to be responding to trauma in an unexpected way.
How does trauma impact on communication?
We need to remember what we discussed earlier about the five words beginning with the letter F that describe how people may respond to trauma. So with freeze, people may seem to be communicating well, but then something happens that reminds them of the trauma and they just clam up. This is quite common when people who have had traumatic experiences in prison or with the police associate any uniform, such as paramedics' uniforms, with bad things happening. Similarly, people's ability to communicate effectively will reduce in different ways if they respond to trauma with flop, fight, flight or fawn.
And in our jobs, a service user will be in a kind of more relaxed setting during an assessment, but in court where the environment is more formal and demanding, that could definitely kind of impact on what they're experiencing.
Definitely. The general setting of a court is, of course, likely to be traumatising for anyone who has had previous unhappy appearances in court or who has seen bad things happening in court on television. We need to remember that the general public are usually unfamiliar with being in court and so are likely to find the experience intimidating, even if they haven't experienced trauma. Also, as mentioned just now, any uniform may be triggering for people who have experienced a wide range of traumas. It's not even necessarily about people in uniforms being associated with perceived mistreatment. For example, someone who's struggling with trauma following a serious accident or illness may be reminded of that when seeing a nurse in uniform. Also, people who have had traumatic, unsettled childhoods may have learnt that people wearing formal clothes, such as suits, usually means bad news, perhaps such as an imminent move to yet another foster home.
Definitely. And if we're focusing on kind of in court and relating to people giving evidence, how can trauma kind of affect this, for example, in terms of memory?
The Psychological Evidence Toolkit Guide for Prosecutors was published in 2019. And that points out that how we respond to trauma may affect very considerably our immediate memory of an event or events, and that recall may change over time. So memories of traumatic events are often organised on a perceptual rather than verbal level, at least in the initial phase following the event. That is, feelings and emotions may be recalled, even if a detailed narrative cannot be given. However, later on, the person may begin to process the event, perhaps by talking it through with a friend or support worker, and then be able to recall it in more detail, including their own thoughts, feelings, and actions during the traumatic event. Of course, this runs the risk that the person may be misjudged for changing their story. Also, bearing in mind again the five F's, people may remember events happening in slow motion or at speed, so that accurate judgment of time isn't possible. There may also be gaps in people's memory of traumatic events, perhaps to block out the most distressing elements.
And is there anything we can do to assist with this?
Definitely. The Guide for Prosecutors recommends that questions should focus on perceptions, such as what did you feel, smell or hear? Also, it shouldn't be assumed that if someone's recall seems to change following trauma, that the person is changing their story deliberately. Similarly, it shouldn't be assumed that an inability to access the detail of a traumatic event indicates a person's unwillingness or inability to give helpful evidence.
What kind of things could help someone who is impacted from trauma in court? What kind of things can be done?
The UK's government the UK government's guidance lists six principles of trauma-informed practice: safety, trust, choice, collaboration, empowerment, and cultural consideration. From a court perspective, following these principles can increase the ability of traumatised people to give reliable evidence, as well as minimising the risk of them being re-traumatised because of aspects of the court process, reminding them of the traumatic event or events that they have experienced. By following these six principles, we're more likely to find out if, for example, court personnel wearing formal clothing will be re-traumatising for an individual.
So to summarise, Cliff, what key thing would you want people working in the criminal justice system to bear in mind when thinking about the impact of trauma on communication?
It's crucial to remember that significant trauma will impact on every aspect of an individual's functioning, including and perhaps especially communication. If we want people who have experienced trauma to function as effectively as possible in court, we need to follow the various official guidelines that I've quoted from. In summary, we need to be asking, what does this person need, rather than what is wrong with this person?
Thank you so much to Cliff for that great discussion about trauma and communication. If you enjoyed this podcast, let us know on Twitter or LinkedIn. You can find more episodes of our Accessing Justice podcast on Podbean or Spotify, or visit communicourt.co.uk.